Good evening. I'm Dorothy Graves, a research assistant professor at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, and this is Science Cafe Little Rock. We are here on 89.1 KUAR the fourth Tuesday of every month from 6:05 to 6:30 to talk about a science topic and give you the chance to call in with your questions. Our number here in the studio is 501-569-8494. That's local here in Central Arkansas, 569-8494. And tonight, we are talking about The Martian, the movie with Matt Damon, but specifically about the psychological aspects of that movie and the psychology of space exploration. Joining me in the studio today, I have Jennifer Fayard, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Wichita Baptist University. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So you're a psychologist, you're in the psychology department. But we're talking about this movie where we have space travel going on, a mission to Mars. Just take a minute, if you would, to tell me about your area of expertise, your areas of research, and you know why we're talking to you about this topic.
Sure. Well, I'm a personality psychologist, and so I study stable dispositions within individuals. And there are certain people that, based on their personality, would be better or worse suited to become astronauts. And particularly in a survival situation, there are certain traits that might lead a person to survive either better or worse than other people.
Good deal. So just to collect everybody in the audience out there, if you by chance have not had the opportunity to see the movie The Martian, it came out in 2015, starring Matt Damon, and it was about a mission to Mars in which he got stranded on Mars and had to employ a variety of survival skills to survive for a fairly decent period of time. And so what we're really talking about is, you know, the psychology around, I think, going up to space in the first place and then being adaptive in such a crisis situation. So to start off, what sort of personalities do you find in people who were driven to become astronauts in the first place?
Well, there are a few personality traits that might lend a person to be more likely to want to go into space. One of those is a personality trait called openness to experience. And people who are high in openness to experience tend to be very curious people. They tend to be people who dislike routine, who need to have novel, new experiences, and also people who like to be intellectually challenged. And so a mission to space would offer opportunities to feed all of those needs. And if you're a person who's high in openness to experience, if you don't meet those needs, you will feel very stagnated. And so these types of people will be drawn to the types of new experiences they might encounter on another planet.
So just in layman's term, you know, we hear about type A and type B personalities. Does that fit into this as well at all?
Not necessarily. The research hasn't really confirmed the notion of type A and type B per se. Personality psychologists tend to talk about personality in terms of traits as opposed to types. And when we talk about a type A or a type B, we're talking about a cluster of personality traits. And so within any one individual, it's unlikely that that person will have that same cluster that we might think of as type A or type B. And so if we separate those personality traits, we tend to get a better idea of what those people are like. So things like openness to experience, extroversion, those sorts of things, if we think of those separately, we tend to get a better idea of the person. And other people that might be drawn to going into space are going to be people that are high in that trait of extroversion, specifically the sensation-seeking portion of extroversion. There might be individuals who otherwise are very highly qualified to go into space, but would rather keep their feet on Earth. There are individuals who are higher in that sensation-seeking part of personality that would be much more interested in venturing out into somewhere a little bit more dangerous with their skills.
If you just tuned in, you are listening to Science Cafe Little Rock, and we are talking about the psychology of space exploration with Jennifer Fayard, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Wichita Baptist University. So speaking again about personalities, do you see differences in the types of personalities between crew members? Like, for example, the commander in a leadership position, you know, that the responsibilities for that person are going to be very different than a lot of the other crew members.
Right. Anyone who wants to become a commander in a situation like this is going to have to be someone who is able to foresee consequences and act quickly and decisively, make decisions that will affect the lives of their crew. And again, not everyone is going to be comfortable or equipped to make those kinds of decisions. And so a person who is very conscientious and very astute is going to be much better in that position than a person who, you know, maybe doesn't want to be in charge of everyone else's life.
And also someone, I would assume, who can cope well with negative results of their decisions.
Definitely. Once you make the decision, you have to be prepared for any consequences. And if we think about the Martian, Commander Lewis had to make a very, very difficult decision to leave Matt Damon's character, Mark Watney, behind on a planet that was totally uninhabited. And that's a really, really difficult decision that not everyone would be able to make. But she did that in order to save the lives of the rest of her crew. And so a commander is definitely going to have to be a different type of person than your average person.
Our number here in the studio, 501-569-8494. If you are just joining us, talking about the psychology of space exploration with Jennifer Fayard, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Ouachita Baptist University, 569-8494, if you have a question for her. So I was looking online to see if I could find out about what NASA currently thinks about, you know, psychology, because for their astronauts, because if you think about the space program, you know, decades ago, they were very short missions in general. Now we're talking about longer missions. You're talking about the International Space Station and obviously in the movie The Martian, a really long trip into space. So do you know anything about how NASA screens for astronauts now with regard to psychology and psychiatric concerns?
I know a little bit about it. NASA definitely will exclude an astronaut for having any kind of psychological disorder. And the reason for that is when you're up in space for an extended period of time, if any issues do arise, there's really not anything that you can do about it, and that could jeopardize the mission and the lives of the other crew. So that's out for sure. And things that they look for in terms of personality will be working well with other people in groups. There's a personality trait called agreeableness that has to do with niceness, cooperativity, trust, and that sort of thing. And if you can't work well in groups when you're up in space for, you know, a year or more with the same few people in close quarters, you have to be able to deal well with those people. You also have to have a degree of emotional stability. So a person who is volatile, easily angered, is not going to be a good candidate to be an astronaut. So they're looking for people that are calm, even keeled, and don't have an extreme response to stress.
Do they do, I would guess they would do some degree of formal testing for all of that, as you know?
They do, and I'm not familiar with the exact testing that is done, but they do look for certain types of traits.
I think we have a caller on the line. Quentin, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I sure can.
Hi, Quentin from Murfreesboro. Thanks for calling in. What's your question for Jennifer?
Yes, ma'am. What I was wondering is what do people need to do? Because, you know, it's like 6 months to get there and then 18 months to get back. I mean, to not only do, you know, daily routine kind of things, but to not go cuckoo and, to, you know, stay stimulated, you know, and fulfill all of their needs, whether they're, you know, physical or mental or pleasure or whatever. I just try to, you know, what needs to happen so a person can stay sane.
Well, that's a good question, and it's going to be a little bit different for each individual. You noticed in The Martian, if you've seen the film, that each individual crew member had their own trunk full of stuff. Watney makes fun of Beth Johansson because she's this super nerd and has all these video games and that sort of thing. Anything you can do in that kind of environment to simulate normalcy will be helpful, and social support is really, really helpful, which is why those crew dynamics are so important. If you have a good relationship with your fellow crew members, that's going to help a lot with that adjustment period.
Thank you for your question. If you have a question for Jennifer, our number, 569-8494, talking about the psychology of space exploration in the context of The Martian, which was the 2015 movie with Matt Damon. There is a point in the movie after you know, we realize that he is okay and he has been stranded. And I don't remember which character, but one of the main characters in NASA says, you know, oh my gosh, what is he thinking right now? What is he feeling? He's 50 million miles away from everybody. He can't have any idea that anyone's going to help him out. What goes through somebody's mind when they find themselves in that situation?
I think for a normal person, it's panic. I would certainly panic. He seemed to handle it pretty well. When NASA's looking for astronauts, they want to find a person who, in a very scary situation, can cope with that. And they do a lot of training, of course, to maybe simulate some of these experiences, but you can't simulate being left alone on a planet. But his training kicked in. He was cool and calm and collected, and that enabled him to do the things that he needed to do to survive.
Oh, when you're in that situation, obviously, like you said, normal people like us would panic, would be our first reaction. Are there, you know, kind of looking at him in the movie, he went through, you know, there was a point where he said, okay, I'm not going to die. And there was a point when he was angry, and then there was a point where he sort of accepted the possibility of death. Are there phases to that sort of a stressful situation, do you think? Or is that just for dramatic effect?
It may have been for dramatic effect. I'm actually not positive if there's research that indicates, you know, sort of stages of dealing with social isolation. But I think panic is sort of the universal first stage in that sort of event.
All right. We have another caller, Marie from Little Rock. What is your question for Jennifer?
Hello.
Hi.
I was curious, when I see pictures that are taken from space, I never see the satellites that are in orbit around the Earth. And I just wondered where they are.
Well, actually, Marie, we are not the right people to answer that. If you want to come up to the Science Cafe after this, which is in the Hillcrest area of Little Rock from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight, we will have some space people and some astronomers who can answer that. I am certainly not qualified to answer that. And Jennifer, we are kind of focusing on the more psychological aspect. But if you are at all able, come on up to the afterthought at 7, and we will certainly be able to address that. We might even have some pictures for you. So, but thank you for calling in. So you talked about the issue of social isolation. Can you expand a little bit more on that in terms of, you know, how important that is, or how important that is to consider in this context?
Yes, social isolation is very, very serious. Humans are social creatures, and even though there's some variability in the degree of social interaction different people want to have. For example, I'm an introvert. I still need some social contact with other people. And when we're deprived of social contact, even for relatively short periods of time, you know, a few days, take prisoners who go into isolation when they've done something that warrants that, they begin to have psychological symptoms pretty quickly. So we start to see symptoms of psychological disorders, things like depression, sometimes even hallucinations begin fairly quickly. And isolation takes a really, really major toll on us.
Does personality feed into that? Like, different personalities will handle that better than others?
Possibly to some extent, but it's going to hit all of us pretty hard, even the introverts.
Who enjoy their time
exactly
by themselves. Our number here in the studio, 569-8494, talking about the psychology of space exploration with Jennifer Fayard, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Ouachita Baptist University. One of the other things I was reading about was a concept of functional fixedness. Can you talk a little bit, explain what that is and how that came into play in the movie?
Yes, functional fixedness really is one of the things that saved Watney's life in this movie. It's incredibly important. Functional fixedness is more or less thinking of an object as it is typically used, as opposed to all the different, you know, myriad ways that it can be used. And functional fixedness is a bad thing. Watney had very low functional fixedness. He was able to take these objects from around the site, from, you know, different parts in the HAB, different parts of the things that he dug up, and able to use those in different creative ways. without being able to think outside the box that way. He might have died, but he solved a lot of problems using those objects in less conventional ways. And one thing that happens when we're very, very stressed out, in a sense that maybe you're stranded on an alien planet, the highest level of stress I can imagine, is it inhibits our ability to think about these objects more creatively, and we get a greater degree of functional fixedness, but probably due to, in some part, his personality and due, in some part, to his training, he was able to get past that and use objects in creative ways. So, for example, he dug up the plutonium core from the ship when they came in. Typically, something like a plutonium core would be used as a power source. He had a problem, and that was that in the rover, he couldn't use his battery source for heat, and he was otherwise going to freeze to death. He dug up this plutonium core and used it as a heat source. He used other pieces from around the HAB to do different things that you would not normally do with those objects in ways that helped him grow food and that sort of thing. So it was very, very important.
Is functional fixedness something that we all have to varying degrees? You know, are there some people who have low functional fixedness to start with?
Well, there are some people that definitely have more functional fixedness to start with, just sort of habitually. But this is something that can be affected by things like stress, but it's also something that we can grow. We can practice thinking about objects in new ways, practice our creativity, and to some extent improve the degree to which we can think outside the box.
Our number here in the studio, 569-8494. We are having a psychological discussion about the movie The Martian, 2015 movie with Matt Damon. My guest is Jennifer Fayard, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Ouachita Baptist University. So what other elements do you really think about in a survival context? We've talked about social isolation. We've talked about functional fixedness. What are some other things that are at play when you're, you know, up against a terrible stressful situation like that?
Well, one of those things that was very important in this film is the willingness to take risk. Ordinarily, space is not the time that you want to make really risky maneuvers, because if you mess up, you die. In this situation, however, in other extreme survival situations, if the threat of death is that imminent, maybe it's worth taking a big risk. And we see Watney taking risks that he maybe ordinarily wouldn't take, but those risks paid off big time. Things like introducing fire into the HAB, that was either this is going to work or I'm going to die. And he did it, and it worked. Things like digging up the plutonium core and using that in the rover, major, major risk. And again, the alternative is you die. But in survival situations, sometimes you have to take those big risks. And we see things like this even in the animal kingdom among animals like chickadees. We've seen research that shows that personality in chickadees is really important to their survival, depending on what the environment they're in is like. So when everything is cushy and you've got plenty of seeds to eat and bugs to eat and things like that, chickadees who are bold, who venture farther away from the nest, tend to get killed. Hawks get them, you know, maybe other things happen to them, but they tend to die more frequently. But in those years where food is more scarce, the chickadees who are very conservative and cautious tend to die because they don't have enough food. So even in chickadees, taking those big risks when you're in dire situations pays off. And so we see, you know, traits like boldness happen in humanity because there are times when those pay off big time, and this is one of those situations.
Very interesting. Albert from Conway, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, what's your question for Jennifer?
Yes, I was wondering, the trait of talking to yourself, is that a positive or negative trait when spending so much time in isolation?
That's a very good question, and I think, you know, when you're in isolation, you can easily, as I mentioned, start to have some symptoms of psychological disorders. However, if you have no one else to talk to, talking to yourself might be the only social support that you have. And we see in The Martian and in movies like Castaway, these characters that are stranded do create a social environment, which shows you just how much we need this. You see Watney not necessarily talking to himself, but talking to the video diary before he makes contact with NASA. In Castaway, the reason we have Wilson is that he needed social contact, and he's still kind of talking to himself, but he's sort of personifying, you know, this volleyball as another person. And so we need social contact, and if we have to use ourselves to get some of that social contact, maybe it's not a bad thing. Of course, though, you can see sometimes where talking to yourself might be more symptomatic of pathology. But
thank you for your question. Yeah, I was kind of wondering the same thing. If, you know, the journaling that we saw that he was doing, if that was, you know, a really useful coping mechanism, or more of, you know, sort of a vehicle for the movie to get across what was going on. Daniel in Conway, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can. What's your question for Jennifer?
Yes, I was wondering about what is the most extreme case of a psychological breakdown or near breakdown that a space station has ever experienced? Has there been such a thing, or have they screened it out to the point of not allowing such a thing? Has anything like that ever happened, and how they deal with it?
I'm not very aware of that sort of thing. I can imagine that there have been people that have had some difficulties, but in terms of major breakdowns, I don't know anything about that. They do a very good job in the screening process of selecting individuals that are going to be very emotionally stable, so they can at least reduce the likelihood that that would happen.
Yeah, I was looking around on the internet, you know, to prepare for the interview, and I couldn't really find any examples. You know, I'm sure they would keep a lot of that. You know, now that would be considered personal health information that they would not release publicly. But there was some information about the Mir astronauts who, you know, were in a volunteer situation, and they had the opportunity to sort of study the psychological responses of these people who had not gone through the screening process. So they weren't necessarily the same types of people. They didn't describe any dramatic breakdowns, but they did mention that social isolation was cited as one of the most significant effects that they felt psychologically. You mentioned that functional fixedness was something that we can practice through creativity. And, you know, I've got small children. I can well imagine, you know, handing them a box, see what they do with it, handing them, you know, I can totally see it in that context. But what about that whole bag of survivor skills? You know, I can think of people in my life that I would go, aha, that person would survive a situation, my husband being one of them. He's very creative. He's like a MacGyver. He can, you know, be an engineer. But not everybody is naturally like that. Can we, you know, are there classes we can take? Are there books we can read? Are there things we can do to get more competent in a very stressful situation?
Definitely. And in terms of the things that you would practice, it's going to differ depending on the situation that you're in. Thankfully, I don't think any of us have to worry about being stranded on Mars, but there might be some situations, maybe hiking and getting stranded in the woods, where some of these skills might come into play. And the key is practicing those skills so that they become an automatic response once the situation warrants that kind of response. And so we're not having to overthink things. We're not having to use those precious cognitive resources to think about our problems. And we saw Watney doing similar things. We saw his training kick in, and he sort of instinctively knew how to handle certain parts of his situation. So thinking through those situations in advance, if we're thinking outdoor survival, maybe taking some classes, but thinking about some of the things that you might encounter and what you might do in those situations could be very, very beneficial.
So I know you're in a collegiate environment. Do you think we encourage that a little bit more in our educational system now than maybe 10, 20 years ago, that sort of thing?
I hope so. I think it depends in a lot of situations, you know, what those schools are like. But I think that now, yeah, we see a lot more flexibility in paths that students can take.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate your time.
You.
And thanks for talking about this topic with us. If you love The Martian, the movie, if you think it's interesting, if you think space is interesting, if you think psychology is interesting, come on up to The Afterthought in the Hillcrest area of Little Rock. As I said earlier, Jennifer and I will be up there from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight to further our discussion. Jennifer will be joined by two other panelists. Anne Wright is an associate associate professor of physics at Hendricks College. She will be our space exploration expert. And Andrew Mason is an assistant professor of physics at the University of Central Arkansas. He will be focusing on the physics problem-solving skills and approaches used by the characters in the movie. Thank you, Jennifer, for being here. And for 89.1 KUAR and Science Cafe, I'm Dorothy Graves.